check. Good for me, Gail.
Okay, check.
Okay, that's good.
Is you're coming through?
Yeah, we're cooking with gas. We're cooking with gas, and so let me get the phone thing up here. So when at 8 o'clock comes, we're going to have the imam call. We're going to call the imam, right?
Exactly. 8 o'clock, yeah. Are we on the air right now?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
Hold on one second. Okay. Hold on.
Yeah. He's the imam, who's the religious leader of the Islamic Society of Western Maryland. He's going to be talking about building trust, reaching out, and among those of differing religious faiths. We've had similar programs on before. Those aimed, well, including
already closed.
Jews,
yeah. Right.
And now we'd like to speak with some of our Muslim neighbors.
Okay, so tell me, did you attend the little gathering at the church? I was going to go, but I had a stomach disorder that day, that afternoon, man. Wow, you know, I had to stay home. did you go hear the conversation? How did that go?
That was a nice gathering. There were three clerics there, including the imam. I'll have to the one man's name I'd have to pull up, but the it was hosted, the interfaith gathering itself was hosted by Covenant Church,
yeah,
near Shepherdstown, and Joel Rainey, the lead pastor there, he was the moderator, and then there were two spiritual leaders besides him, including Imam Farouk Post, and there were a lot of questions. Some of them. Oh, how would you put it? Maybe a little bit pointed. We're trying to learn, as I guess the those people would say, what's going on here, and that's fair enough. As Joel Rainey said, let's talk about the differences. Disagreement is, quote, disagreement was fine. In fact, disagreement is to be expected, but it's disrespect, he says, it's never okay. And we hope that that maybe we'll learn some more about that part of it today.
Yeah. Okay. I'm looking forward to that. I think it's an important discussion. I heard some reports from that meeting that were not that happy with it.
I'm sorry. You heard what?
I heard some reports from others that attended that meeting that they were not that happy with the meeting. They felt that it tended to showcase right wing thing, you know, like the thing about but homosexuality and birth control and abortion, and there was like this
okay.
Shared stuff on that, you know, which if I was a Muslim, I don't, you know, that's stupid for me to say.
Yeah, I
don't think I would take that. There's no, you're not going to find any friends in that part of the country. I'll tell you right now, you're not. You know, so if that's to me, that's a stupid move to flirt over those issues. You know, on the part of anybody. You know, but anyway, that's just my opinion. But anyway, I wasn't there, but I did hear that.
I would agree, certainly, that there was some of that, maybe too much of it, and this was a this is a church, John, that I understand broadcasts Sunday sermons and this kind of thing. So,
yes, they're part of the. I believe that they are, you know, part of this national right wing conservative Christian movement. Yes, yes, they're very much involved in it.
Unfortunately, I don't know that, but it wouldn't. Wouldn't surprise me.
They used to send
Joel Rainey. He said repeatedly, or well, you know, disrespect is not acceptable. But yeah, I certainly think there could have been a a more trustful, if you will, atmosphere. I didn't feel enough of that from a few people.
I mean, you have a unbelievably anti-Muslim, you know, like atmosphere that's been promoted at the highest levels in the country, and it's encouraging, you know, fascists of every description to come out and be brazen about their hatred of. Anything they don't. I mean, they really. What does Trump mean by extreme vetting? He means to keep all the Muslims out of the country. That's what he said in the beginning. That's what he wants.
Well, look, yeah. Look who helped elect Trump, and it was some of the right wing Christian churches, sadly, you know, we've talked about this on the air before, and my gosh, as long as they got, or at least in the opinion of some, including me, as long as they got their person who would stand up against abortions and one or two other things, they were happy. They didn't care, or didn't seem to care, what baggage the man was dragging along from other areas. Very, very sad.
Yeah, no, I hear you, pal. And well, we've been, revisiting some of the. Maybe we should do this before we make the call here. Some of the, tough stories going on in the thing. There's a another killing by somebody who appears to be a terrorist, ISIS-related incident in New York City. Somebody
very, very sad.
With a
yes.
truck that ran down, I don't know, 10 or 12 people.
Yeah, I think as I have it at this point, there are at least 8 dead and more than 12 injured, and as you say, it's being attributed according to The Hill online, and they cite several other sources that. That it's being attributed to a man from 29-year-old man from Uzbekistan came here in 2010, lived in Florida, was heard yelling the Arabic for God is great.
Yeah.
Quote unquote, as he exited the vehicle.
Apparently
very
left
sad.
Notes. And, he apparently and, left
yeah,
notes.
I hope Imam Post can share his thoughts on some of this. know, the New York governor said that all evidence that they have suggests he was acting alone, and a so-called lone wolf syndrome.
Well, how do they know? They haven't had enough time to determine that. I mean, they don't know that for sure yet. I mean, I heard, yeah. Yeah, maybe he was just inspired by some TV show or website, you know, who knows. But
good point.
But how do you know until you dig in? They're going to have to investigate and find out who he was. You know.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
So.
And and according the Hill quoted ABC News as reporting that he left a note at the scene saying he'd carried out the attack in the name of ISIS.
So immediately Trump starts to tweet back to his original theme from the campaign,
exactly.
Which is ban all the Muslims, right? And
yeah.
Remember what he used to say? Remember he thought it was funny, but he had a joke. He says, "Well, you know, if I tried to give you a box of Chiclets and told you the two of them were poisoned, would you eat any of them?"
Remember when he did that?
You know, and so, I mean, this is just the, extreme vetting. That's what he means by extreme vetting, you know. Let's keep the Muslims out. Matter of fact, maybe we should keep the Puerto Ricans out, too.
Well, and of course.
We don't need any African immigrants.
Yeah, I'm sure you know this too, John. But he wants to swing thought off the Russia probe, so it's probably going to get. He's going to be saying some particularly sick stuff in the next few days, just to keep people's minds off.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Of how fast, hopefully, some of his people are going to go down.
That's true. I think you're right. I agree with you. You know?
And we can only hope. We can only hope that I happen to believe obviously he deserves his day in court, but let's give him his day in court. And I happen to believe that he knew a lot of what was going on.
Sure he did.
And hopefully we're going to find out in the coming months.
Right. I mean, I don't. Well, you know, now you got the famous, you know, prosecutor squeeze play going on. But they've got a couple of little fish. They're going to squeeze these guys to get them to talk, and to rat. And so you get the rat, you know, the ratting going on. And my only concern is that. You know, they may not fear Trump, but maybe they might be afraid of Vladimir Putin if they start writing on him. You know, he sometimes sends people that little plutonium sandwich. They, you know.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, when you think of Putin and Trump, you kind of think of, you know, like gangster stereotypes, right? I mean, because that's kind of how they act. I mean, it's like it's like you're listening to, Vito Corleone, how they solve problems. I mean, oh, God.
this is a dangerous, Putin's. Obviously, a very, very dangerous man, and we've all heard how much Trump admires him. It's clear who his heroes are.
Well, you know, I don't know what Putin's. I mean, we make fun of him all the time. I actually don't believe he's quite as irrational as Trump. Okay, I mean, I think his motives are pretty transparent. Actually, I mean, Russian national interest has been, you know, opposed to all the rollbacks that took place after the collapse of the USSR, right? And you know, they sort of turned around and reversed some of them. Okay, so
okay.
But you know, I mean, and they have an oil based, energy based economy. At least a lot of it is, and so okay. You know, they act like that. That you know, it's not too hard to understand what their motives are. Sometimes that's where their income is coming from. So. And so you can see how, you know, Putin, I mean, he's been helping create divisive things in the European Union because he thinks the European Union is a military bloc against him. And it is. And it has been. And he's right about that. I mean, so, you know, so I mean, that's the leftovers of the Cold War, right? Pretty much that, you know, there's a lot of grievances there that go, you know, way back now. And so, yeah, so he's undermined the European Union and, you know, and he found a way to, he didn't like Clinton. He thought that Clinton was directly involved in turning the Ukraine back toward the EU as opposed to the, you know, relationship it had with Russia. And, you know, so he blamed her for that. And I just put these things down as, okay, there's a certain rationality of kind of wherever he thought the national interest of Russia was in these choices he made. Now, personally, I think if he chose to back Trump, that was a foolish thing to do. Because, you know, you can't trust that guy to do anything, can you? I mean, I wouldn't buy anything from him. Anything. I don't care what he said to you. You know, I mean, it's bullshit from beginning to end. How could you believe a damn thing he said ever? It's just
a part that's just as sad, John, is that he doesn't really care.
No, he doesn't.
Or doesn't seem to care whether we believe a thing he says. Right. It's who Trump is, he's the tough guy, and he just doesn't care what John Case.
Oh no, he doesn't give a shit.
Believes or doesn't believe, he doesn't care what. Certainly doesn't care what Gail Becker believes.
No,
or doesn't believe.
No, I'm not interested in persuading him. I told you know. Here's my theory about what should happen to these guys. Okay, is the billionaire class, you know, needs to take a break from global power. Okay, and we're going to put them all on an island somewhere out in the middle of the ocean. And we're going to say, okay, guys, you know, you now can just, you know, there's probably going to be, you know, maybe a million of you, you know, worldwide. We're going to put you there, and you just got to fend for yourselves. You're going to get about the same amount of aid as Puerto Rico is getting. Okay?
Yeah.
And good luck surviving, okay? We'll talk to you in 10 years. And, you know, then we're going to just leave them there and let them see how the survival of the fittest thing works out. Have a little experiment. See if any of them survive.
Who was it? I think he's a billionaire himself, but he's on the left wing, or tends to be liberal. But he had was reported as telling other billionaires at a gathering. I think it was in Sweden or something about a year ago that he says, "Look, unless this inequality is
addressed,
changed, we're gonna have pitchforks in the street," and that apparently hasn't gotten through yet.
Oh, I don't know. I think they did. I think the Koch brothers set about hiring their own pitchforks and getting these guys all roused up to that. You know, you're scrambling for crumbs out there, you white folks. You know, you gotta get up and take arms against all these immigrants and black people and everything like that, taking away your rights. Taking away your hard-earned jobs, stealing everything from you, right?
Okay. That's to
right. Pay off the churches.
Pitchfork thing, as you see it.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's where a lot of the Trump thing has come from. Is that these both the ultra right and the religious groups, you know, they pound this stuff all the time through the abortion and other stupid issues, right? You know, and then the other thing that happens is on these fascist, you know, element. They got them all going, right? And they're all, and you look at where the funding for some of these, you know, who paid for, you know, the Tea Party convention? The Koch brothers, they paid for it completely. Nearly complete, enough so they own them. Okay, so anyway, and same thing with, you get these, look at the big money from Coors and all that behind these right-wing churches. Okay, and some of their stuff, you know, the prosperity gospel and this bullshit. You know, it's okay. You could be rich and get through into heaven too. Jesus wants you to be rich.
Well, there was, I think, one of the hurricane disasters recently in the southern part of the country, one of the big churches was criticized for initially refusing to open its doors to people who didn't have any housing or even any place to sleep.
Yeah, Joel Osteen, right.
He's the prosperity
gospel guru.
Yeah.
One of them.
Yeah. I think let's make clear that at least my understanding of what Jesus said was the opposite of that, and I think some of the so-called Christians
the hypocrisy
that
of religion
are fine with this prosperity gospel. Well, that's not what Jesus was reported saying. Whether he said it or not is a different thing, but that is not what he was reported.
Oh, no, no, no. I mean, I think the Gospels are certainly very clear about, you have the Joel Osteen and the prosperity gospel is no different than the Pharisees who in the temple whose tables and whatever altars Jesus went in and overthrew them all. Turned them
Absolutely.
All over.
Absolutely.
That's exactly yes. the same. That's right. Yeah, you're probably, you know, what about the people here, you know? So yes. I don't think there's any question that that Jesus is, as reported in at least Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. No. Yes. Okay, right. We don't know.
Love thy neighbor, and we haven't.
Right.
We haven't seen too much of that from a lot of these churches.
But anyway, I'm looking forward to our conversation here. And so what I'm going to do here in about 3 minutes here, we're going to dial his number, okay? That you sent
okay.
me.
Okay.
And
okay.
So let me get your little email up here that you sent me about that. Here we go. Yes. Okay. Okay. Cool. So what we'll do is when we can connect to him. Why don't you introduce him? Is that okay?
Should I stay on the line?
We're going to add him to this call. Okay.
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 That's
okay,
the plan.
Sure.
That's the plan here, Gail. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Anyway, let's see. Let's actually call him. Let's try to get this done now so that we got time here to do it. Okay. So if you hear a little silence, it's just me typing the number in. Okay. All right. So it's 860. Where's my keyboard? Where's my keyboard here? This is great technical radio here for our listeners here. 860. And then we got 477. And 7729.
Okay.
Hold on. It's 77. 29. How does it call it? Okay, add to call. Okay, it should be trying to call here in a minute.
Okay.
I don't hear the dialing, though.
Hello.
Oh, hello. Holly. This is John Case calling from Enlightened Radio. Is this, please identify yourself here, let me make sure I got the right call.
This is Paul. How are you, John, today?
Okay, good. Gail, why don't you introduce our guest? Okay, we're on the air now, and I'm glad this call worked. Hold on one second, Gail. Gail, why don't you go ahead and introduce our guest?
Wonderful. Yeah. This is Imam Farouk Post. He's the religious leader of the Islamic Center of Western Maryland, just outside of Hagerstown. And we had hoped, we want to talk about building trust within and among some of these various faith communities, and I really look forward. I was among those at a gathering, an interfaith gathering last week, at which the imam was one of three religious leaders who spoke with people. John and I, incidentally, were talking on the air earlier, Imam, about that particular gathering, and there was sadly, John says, some feeling, at least by some, and I picked that up just a hair. I won't say that there was a lot of it, but I picked up that there was some really conservative stuff going on there, some of it was unfair to you, so could we, or I'll turn it over to John, but I'd like
right.
to.
Well, a reaction to that meeting would be interesting to get on the record here. But I also let me just say, how should I refer to you? Farouk? Is that how I should refer to you?
Yes, Farouk.
Okay. I was the former president of the Shepherdstown Ministerial Association here in for several years, and I represented the Quaker group actually at the council, but we had a somewhat historic, sometimes contentious relationship with the Covenant Baptist Church for a while. I don't know. It was at times we would participate together, and then other times we would, you know, they didn't like the newspaper we put out, and we had a number of disputes. It was a long history to the
this is really, then history that you're reporting goes back some.
It's been you know, this is an old community, and there's lots of different trends going on in it. But anyway, I welcome you to the program, and I'm.
It's a pleasure and honor. Thank you so much.
Why don't you give me your reaction to the meeting that took place? I understand it was a good turnout, and I thought it was very interesting. You know, that the Covenant Church agreed to participate and sponsor, and I think that's a very positive thing. But I'm interested in your reaction to the experience and what you hope to see come out of it, if anything.
Well, I think it was a great gathering. Me personally, I think it was a great gathering, and I think it was, a way that we, as those who are devoted to our faiths, even though we adhere to different faiths, just a way that we can show that just because we have different theological beliefs and things like this doesn't mean that we can't work together to try to make our communities better and try to decrease, you know, hatred and ignorance and oppression in our societies. And I mean, this is what our religion, Islam, teaches us. It teaches us to, you know, respond to ignorance and hatred and oppression and, you know, a lot of the things that we've seen going on in society today with knowledge, to teach the people, to enlighten the people, to teach people with love and good treatment. Actually, this is what we find in the Quran. The Quran that everybody seems to be so afraid of, you know. Actually, you know, our Lord says in the Quran, "And the servants of the Most Merciful walk with humility upon the earth. And if an ignorant person addresses them with ignorance or negative comments, then they should respond by saying peace." So I believe, right, you know, I believe that that was the first step into trying to, you know, remove some of the hatred directed towards Muslims or minority groups here in our local communities. And I think, you know, one of the most effective ways to fight hatred is to smile in the face of those who talk bad about you. You know, kill people with kindness, you know?
I was, I used to attend an Episcopal church in near Swarthmore, Pennsylvania, which is a very, very old church, and it happened to have a child care center that my kids used at the time, and so I started to attend it, and there had been a long history of controversy, especially going back through the civil rights period, and there was a elderly African American woman who on one of the anniversaries of the civil rights movement, I can't remember, this would have been sometime in the 80s, so she stood before the congregation and she recalled the insults that she had received at the hands of some members of this church who were still living.
Oh, wow.
And but she said that she trusted in the Lord, you know, who talked to her and said that a wise man would not insult you, and a fool cannot. I thought that was.
Well, it might be important to say that we're dealing with a lot of individuals in any given church, and I think I have to be careful not to oversimplify or stereotype the membership, of a church.
I can't speak about the church, but I can definitely say, you know, that stereotypes are part of our society. Unfortunately, you know, look at, you know, what the Muslims are stuck with, you know, with stereotypes as being terrorists. You know, and one thing, you know, I'd just like to, you know, put out to you and maybe some of our listeners, and they can call in and you know, maybe give some answers.
That would be wonderful.
Muslims, you know, when they say we are terrorists, I mean, well, let's think back in history, because when we study history and we look at history, it really puts our present into perspective correctly. Like, you know, who started the First World War? Muslims or non-Muslims? Who started the Second World War? Muslims or non-Muslims? Who was the first ever in human history to drop a nuclear bomb on people, on civilians, Muslims or non-Muslims? Who came to America and killed more than 50 million Native Americans, Muslims or non-Muslims? Who captured more than 180 million African people as slaves and threw about 88% of them in the Atlantic Ocean, Muslims or non-Muslims? So when we really think about that, I mean, you know, of course Muslims were not responsible for any of these heinous or gruesome acts of genocide and crimes against humanity. And in my opinion, they are worse than humanity. So when they say and they, you know, point these stereotypes at Muslims, that Muslims are terrorists, first they have to define, well, what is terrorism and what is a terrorist? Because, you know, if a non-Muslim does something bad, it is just a crime. Right. But if a Muslim resists and defends himself, his family, or his lands, then he's considered a terrorist.
Yeah.
So, you know, the double standard, we have to remove that double standard first. Then we come back to the point, like, you know, something that just happened yesterday, you know, and we're very sad about what happened.
You're referring to the Manhattan incident, right?
Yeah. In Manhattan, you know, an individual who claims that he's Muslim. We don't know if he's Muslim or not. I mean, all we know right now is from the media. He had a paintball gun and a pellet gun. And he ran over some, you know, some innocent bystanders in Manhattan. But 5 minutes after the incident, he's a terrorist. But the man who killed over 50 people in Nevada, who had a whole room full of guns, because maybe he's Caucasian or maybe he's white, he wasn't considered a terrorist.
Yeah.
So, you know,
yeah,
media,
and maybe you could share with us what the Quran says about terrorism and the greater jihad, the lesser jihad. From what? Well, yes, this. What this man did apparently had little to do with what I'm told the Quran says.
Yeah, what he did has nothing to do with what we find taught in the Quran or what the Prophet Muhammad taught as well. And any Muslim who is a practicing Muslim, he's going to, you know, denounce what that individual did. And, you know, and I think we talked about it briefly at our meeting at the Covenant about, you know, jihad. Jihad just means to struggle and exert your efforts. And the most biggest struggle that the human being has is against his low and base and negative desires. You know, he's fighting the evil within himself first. That's the first thing. If he cannot struggle against his own forces of evil within his body, you know, then he won't be able to struggle against the external forces as well. So jihad is not what, unfortunately, the, you know, the media portrays it to be, where it's, you know, fighting with weapons and things like this. You know, jihad is speaking out against oppression.
Let me ask a question about that.
Against those who oppress others and transgress against others. That is one of the main, you know, principles of jihad, of helping the weak and the oppressed against the oppressor. So anybody who is oppressing others, then, you know, it's a fundamental teaching in Islam that we help the ones who are oppressed against the oppressors, whether it's with the tongue, it's by speaking out against oppression, whether it's with the pen, by writing articles against, you know, oppression and transgression against others, or if it, you know, comes down to other means, then, you know, defending yourself, of course, you know, nobody's going to let anybody harm you or hit you or, you know, harm your family and things like that, so you have to defend yourself. Transgressing the limits and things like that is what is impermissible in, I think, all religions, not just, I mean, if you open up the Bible,
sure,
if you open up the book of Deuteronomy, the book of Ezekiel, you're going to have verses where it talks about, you know, defending yourself
right.
in times of
conflict.
You know, conflicts and things like that. So it's normal. I mean, it's normal that, you know, people would want to defend themselves and defend land and things like that, you know?
Yeah, but let me... we have faith communities. Let me just speak regionally here, you know, in terms of Western Maryland and, you know, parts of West Virginia and Virginia here. More rural communities that have faith communities where there's a lot of social infrastructure in the United States that's, let me just say, deteriorating in many respects at the public level. And not as much institutional support for all kinds of redressive grievances as well as some essential services. And so, you know, the role that faith communities play in taking care of each other.
You're absolutely right. I agree with you 100%. But, you know, John, the way that our society has chosen to live, where there is a separation between state and religion, I mean, that's a, you know, a
right
thing which hinders a lot of times the religious groups. I mean, I think it needs to start. I think it needs to start individually. You know, we as human beings really need to start contacting our hearts and souls and connecting them with the Creator who created us and trying to fulfill first, what does He want from us here on the face of this earth? And then once we do that, I believe that we can rectify the problems within our own souls, our hearts, and then our families, by trying to keep our families together, then our neighborhoods, then trying to clean up our neighborhoods, then our towns. And, you know, I believe it all has to start individually. Then once individuals, you know, of the society have the same goals and aims and beliefs, then we will be able to build our own organizations and own communities, right? That's where the word community comes from, commune. And unity. I mean, we'll all take care of each other.
That leads to the question of whether or not a religious authority should be of some kind or another, should be governing society and or standing above society.
Yeah.
And I, of course, constitutionally in the United States, we question that one, mostly because of our particular history with England, you know. But what's your view on that? Because for Israel, as well as Iran, in some respects, are both countries that where at least in one form or another, religious doctrine trumps the Republican aspect of a republic. It seems to be the same as in Iran, maybe in a very different manifestation. But how does that, you know, there are traditions in both Judaism, and there have been obviously in Christianity, look at all the kingdoms. You know, all over Europe for ages, right? So, I mean, but now we're in this era, the Democratic Revolution started with the U.S. and France and spread around the world in a lot of places, rejects that in some respects, but not always. How do you personally view that? I think it's a controversy, fair enough to say. Okay, how do you view that?
Definitely. I can at least say this from my experience. I had the opportunity to actually live in Saudi Arabia for about 12 years.
Right, right.
And Saudi Arabia, as we all know, is, you know, one of the countries that they say practices, you know, Islamic teachings and things like that. And one thing I can tell you about my experience living there is that, you know, even though you might have some of the social ills in Saudi Arabia that you have in any of the other countries in the world, right, the percentage of, you know, sexual harassment, the percentage of, you know, crimes towards women, you know, rape, things like this, like burglary, selling of drugs and criminals and things like this is far less than some of the countries that don't actually have any religious doctrines in their constitution of how to, you know, govern their country and their city. So, you know, I mean, we have, when we look at our dollar bills here in America, it says, "In God we trust." I mean, I think that, you know, whoever made the dollar bill, that maybe that was in their mind, that, you know, I think this country was, you know, based around you know, having some type of religious doctrine to, you know, guide the people and help the people. Because, you know, there's some things when we look at and when we understand what does the Creator want for us, and we really understand that He knows everything. When, you know, when our lawmakers, they make laws, they don't necessarily take into consideration the needs of all of the individuals of the society. Maybe they will draw up laws which are, you know, catering towards one particular group and not taking into consideration another group. And this is when we, where we see the manifestations of, you know, I guess you can say, a lack of, you know, a lack of having complete knowledge of all of the needs that, you know, the citizens of a country will need. But we believe, you know, as Muslims, that God, the one who created the universe and the one who created, you know, human beings and knows their needs and wants and desires, He will provide the best laws for us to follow and for us to, you know, live in a society without oppression, without transgression against others, and, you know, to make our societies better and things like that. So, you know, that brings us to maybe, you know, of what a lot of non-Muslims may be worried about regarding Sharia law.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And, yeah, and I think that, you know, those who are concerned, they should learn more about it. Because, you know, the human being, normally, he tends to fear things that he doesn't know about. But then once they know about them, right, the fear is normally removed. So I think those who are a little scared about Sharia law, they should learn about it. I mean, are they afraid of the law of Moses in the Old Testament? Are they afraid of the laws of David or Solomon or Jesus in the New Testament? All of these are also called Sharia law. I mean, the laws of Sharia, they are divine laws from God, which were made for the benefit of all mankind, to guarantee human rights for all human beings, whether they're black, whether they're white, whether they're Caucasian, whether they're African, whether they're Indonesian, whether they're Korean, whether they're from, you know, it doesn't matter about their race or anything. Sharia law teaches us that our neighbors have rights over us. Sharia law teaches us the rights of our parents, the rights of our children. Sharia law prohibits oppression and transgression against the weak, the handicapped, against women, children. Sharia law enjoins one to pray and to glorify their Lord. Sharia law teaches Muslims to supplicate and thank God for the food that He provided for them. Sharia law teaches us to feed the poor and help the needy.
Yeah.
Sharia law teaches us to stand with the weak and oppressed, to respect and honor our parents and not to speak bad to them.
But you'd have to have a report. But you would need to have a report card about performance of those obligations, because those are, you know, those words are familiar to me from you know, Christian gospels as well. And but the performance is very different depending on the community and who's leading it.
Definitely.
And you know, and so I think that the well, I don't buy having a religious authority to law. I don't that it's too easy to corrupt. Of course, democracies can be corrupted too. But I think we I would probably vote to retain it, given the the consequences.
I mean, that's why
otherwise, so
individually, you know, if you can't practice that individually. Like you said, you know, when it comes down to practical implementation of it, if individuals can't practice that individually within themselves and within their household, then how are they expected to do it anywhere else than that, you know? So that's where, you know, like if I wanted to practice Sharia law in my house, it doesn't affect anybody, just me and my family. I want my family to follow God's law, just like any other practicing Christian, such as Amish people or such as Mennonites or, you know, people who are really practicing their religion, you know?
Right, so
they practice it in their house and they have specific laws and teachings that they follow and things like that. I mean,
but
we believe in the end that God knows best what is good for human beings.
Yeah, but who judges that? Okay, I mean, we have conflicts of interest all the time in which principles are invoked by different sides and different kinds of disputes that sometimes are very very big disputes of involving huge sums of wealth, and we appeal to the same God and we worship the same God, and yet we plunge swords into each other on the battlefield over it. Are we going to have a Supreme Court and a Congress and a Bill of Rights, or are we not? And who's going to be the? Are we going to allow the people to govern themselves, or are we going to surrender that to a religious authority, which is most likely not going to be elected?
Yeah, well,
so who's going to sign the paper and say, oh, God says so and so?
No, I mean, but that's what that Sharia law, it actually teaches those who adhere to the Sharia law to govern themselves, because they know that God is watching them. They know that God is listening to them. So when they have that God consciousness in everything they do in their lives, they're going to know, well, okay, I'm a follower of God's law, God's commandments, so I'm not going to come close to fornication. I'm not going to come close to intoxicants. I'm not going to come close to oppressing people. So that's why you find in many of the countries that do implement some of God's law, or the countries that implement more of God's laws, you find that the rates of crime, the rates of, harming others and transgression and drugs and things like this are far less than those that don't have any concept of God in their in their communities or in their societies. You know, I mean, and that's I think anyone who looks and studies with some critical analyzation will actually come to find that. You know.
Okay. All right. Do you have any other questions, Gail?
No. One of the questions would be, tell us, if you would, how people can learn more about Islam and the Islamic Society of Western Maryland.
Oh, definitely. Our center in Western Maryland, it's always open, and they're always welcome. Visitors are always welcome to come and meet real Muslims. They're welcome to come and sit down and drink a cup of tea with us, have a conversation as we are here, and interact with people who
very
have
cool
the same goals. Many of the same goals that everybody else has: a proper education for our children, safe communities free from crime, drugs, burglaries. I think that whoever would come and visit, that those Muslims that they meet will be nothing like what the media portrays them to be. People just need to come out of their shells and open their minds and learn about their neighbors, because, Muslims make up 2 out of 7 of all the inhabitants, of the world. And I'll tell those who think that Muslims, are fundamentalists or extremists, to stop being misled by the media and come to the mosques to read some meal, to meet some real Muslims. Open up the Quran, read it.
That would be wonderful. And you're involved in the interfaith community in Washington County, are you not? Heavily involved, I believe.
And Gail, us as Americans, we've always been known to be critical thinkers. So with everything going on in the world now, it would be saddened to see that our reputations are destroyed, where Americans are not known to be critical thinkers anymore. So don't let the biased media outlets herd you like a sheep into their barn of misconceptions and doubts about Islam and the Muslims, so they can slaughter your common sense and critical thinking abilities. I advise all of our listeners to find out for yourself, and anything you don't understand, whether you read it in the Quran or anything like this, don't ask Google. come and ask those who are knowledgeable about it and have studied this book. It's the same thing with if a Christian doesn't understand a verse in the Bible. He's not going to go online and find the explanation, you know, because he might have 20, 30, 40 different interpretations or explanations. He's going to go to a religious figure, a pastor or a priest who is trustworthy and ask him, well, what do you explain this verse to mean so I can apply it in my life and help me? You know, so, you know, our doors are always open, and we always welcome guests, and we hope that you and John will come and pay us a visit. Actually, Gail, you came out before, I think. We're just missing John.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's down here in Bolivar, West Virginia here, so I'm not that far. Anyway, I want to thank you very much for coming on today. And I usually podcast these. It takes me about a day to get them up. And I'll I think I have your email from Gail. Do I have?
Yes, sir.
Yes, yeah, I do. Okay. And so I'll include you on it, and you can listen to it or promote it as you wish. Okay.
Oh, you're recording it.
Oh yes, we do this, and we podcast it. We're live right now, and then I usually podcast the show a day afterwards on so that people can listen to it at alternate times.
And you've given your website address, right?
We have that offline in the email, you know, so unless you want to announce it publicly, you might as well announce your website.
That's right, we have it on our website. Go ahead and say it
so it's on the tape, so if people are listening, they know how to get a hold of you. Okay,
anybody who's interested in and coming to pay us a visit or to just come over and sit down and talk or have a cup of tea, they can visit our website at iswmd.org. That's iswmd.org, Islamic Society of Western Maryland.org. And, you know, we'll be welcome to sit down and talk with anybody who would, you know, like to talk or have questions about our faith and about our way of life. And, John, I really commend you for your good work, and I really thank you for having me on the show, and Gail as well. Thank you.
Okay.
For inviting me.
Our pleasure.
And hopefully
thank you so much for speaking with us, and I wish you well. Okay.
All right.
You as well. Thank you.
Okay. Take care. Bye bye.
Take care.